baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Well, good morning, sir. What a nice little week we've had here on the walk-off, eh, bud?
It's been a fun little time, yeah.
Busy, for busy. Everyone out there who missed our Joe Siddle interview on Wednesday, it's up on YouTube and wherever you listen to your podcast right now, feel free to check it out because that was just a humdinger of a good time.
Joe was so talkative and had some really awesome stories.
That was one of the comments in the YouTube section of our podcast, was just how talkative he was and how in-depth he got into his stories. He was just an open book. It was very, very cool. So again, you can check that out. We do have more great guests coming up here on the walk-off. We've got one of the top prospects for the Blue Jays, Spencer Horowitz. He's in the top 20 and one of the more likely gentlemen in those prospects to make a debut in 2022, especially if there is an injury. So we're going to talk to him. We're also going to talk to ex-Blue Jay, retired now, Mark Zepchinski. I don't know if you folks remember him. He came up in 2009, 2010 with the Blue Jays, and then he was traded to the Cardinals the year that they won the World Series in 2011, so we're excited to chat with him next week. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast, and on TikTok. I'm Scott Belford. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Walk Off. I'm joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack.
Hello, hello.
We are going to get into the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds denied. We will spend some time on that. The international free agent class has been a strong point for the Blue Jays over the years. So we'll kind of look into that and what we can expect in the upcoming year. David Phelps back with the Blue Jays on a minor league deal and has a really good chance of carving out a place for himself in that Blue Jays bullpen. We'll talk all of that and more. All right, my dude, let's get into this, I guess.
Let's get into it. Where do you want to start? We got a lot to cover.
Let's start with the Hall of Fame stuff.
Sure.
And we'll get into the Blue Jays after that. Tuesday night, the Baseball Writers of America announced their choices for who was going to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And honestly, dude, I don't think I remember a year where more people were up in arms about the choices, or I guess a better way of characterizing it is the lack of choices.
Mm-hmm.
David Ortiz, Big Poppy, was the lone inductee this year. First ballot Hall of Famer. The
Are
shock,
you surprised?
I think... I was a little surprised to see David Ortiz get in on the first ballot, but okay. I wasn't surprised to see him get into the Hall of Fame. Deserves to be there, I think.
Before we dive too deep, Barry Bonds, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer under different circumstances?
Yes.
You think he is no matter what?
I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, we will get into this, and obviously there is a sticky portion to this kind of a muddy inductee class because of all the PEDs.
Okay, well, even beyond the PEDs, I always feel like anybody who... has the most dominant years of their career for one of the major baseball franchises, and we have to agree that the Red Sox are one of the top three or four franchises in baseball, right? You got the Yankees, the Dodgers, you can't argue with anything there.
Yep.
But are the Red Sox number
three?
No, I
agree. Absolutely, I would say so.
So if he did everything he did for the Kansas City Royals, statistically, everything else is the same.
Ortiz is not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Not a first ballot Hall of Famer, right? Like, am I crazy for thinking that?
No, not at all. And we're going to get into that. In fact, why don't we even talk the character clause really quick here? Because I did want to bring up that the baseball writers didn't like Barry Bonds, right? Because right. he got caught doing steroids, which he was caught during a period in baseball referred to as the steroid era.
I'm familiar.
And Barry Bonds is a prickly dude, right? Like, he is not the nicest guy. He didn't ever cuddle up with the media. And I think that played a lot of it as to why he didn't get into the Hall of Fame. Do you have the character clause up here or a rough idea?
Yeah, I do, more or less. Basically, the quote that I've got here is, in regards to Hall of Famers, the committee has decided that candidates shall be chosen on the basis of playing ability, sportsmanship, character, their contribution to the teams on which they played, and to baseball in general.
I mean, the fact Barry Bonds, one of the greatest hitters of all time, and I don't think that's arguable. You just look at his numbers and he truly is one of the greatest ball players to ever swing a bat. Isn't in the Hall of Fame. He's being denied, and a lot of it has to do with testing positive for PEDs. But David Ortiz also tested positive for PEDs. Really does go to show you kind of how arbitrary and hypocritical and kind of broken the Baseball Hall of Fame is. I mean, I know there is that old-timey saying, right, that mean cheaters never prosper, but...
Yeah, well, when I grew up playing sports, we also had a saying, and it was, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, okay, so we are going to get into this. I just don't wish anyone to think that what we're about to say is taking away from David Ortiz. I truly do believe David Ortiz is a Hall of Famer, and I believe he deserves to be there. But I think a large portion of why he got in on the first ballot is because he's a great dude. David Ortiz is a good time. When Big Poppy is around, could he single-handedly start a dance party? Yes, he could, and he will. Those sunglasses and those pearly whites, they light up a room, baby.
They sure do.
Like, you know, even if you happen to watch him getting into the Hall of Fame and he's there with Pedro Martinez and his whole support system, and he's waiting for the phone call, and he gets the phone call, and just how excited and exuberant and just a character he was and is, you know, it made it very difficult not to do anything but be incredibly happy for the guy. But and this is my opinion on the whole thing, okay? The Baseball Hall of Fame is a museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a religious shrine. So let's act accordingly. Okay, like the steroid era happened. It happened. It was 12 years of Major League Baseball where the majority of guys were either doing PEDs or knew about it. And this is up and down the system. Ownership to the lowest guy in the clubhouse, the trainer, the guy cleaning up the floor, or whoever, right? Everybody knew. Shunning it and ignoring it is ridiculous, in my opinion. I think you document it. Absolutely, you put an asterisk next to it. But acknowledge it. It's a major chunk of baseball. You're going to tell the story of baseball without Barry Bonds? Like, are you kidding me? Cooperstown is a museum documenting the best in baseball. And yes, the character does come into play, but at a certain point, you almost need to put that away, right? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to taint the MLB's image. Oh, like, oh, they're pure. They're snow white image. Oh, you can't have somebody taint that, right? I mean, the Hall of Fame is already filled with dudes who have, like, domestic violence charges, who are known racists. This isn't a collection of the greatest people on the planet. This is a collection of the greatest ball players on the planet. And ball players, like every profession, is filled with humans who make mistakes and do shitty things. And to just act like it's some sort of shrine when there's so many hypocrisies to look at and point to, it just seems so crazy. But let's throw the characters thing out of here, okay? Let's just throw the character out and let's just look at some stats.
Okay.
So we're going to start with a few fun ones. David Ortiz's career on-base percentage is .380.
Okay.
Pretty darn impressive.
That's a pretty good season.
That's a pretty darn impressive career on-base percentage. Barry Bonds' career on-base percentage, if you turned all of his 762 home runs into outs, .384.
Wow.
Like, just let that stat spin around your brain for a second, because that is absolutely insane. If you take his record-breaking MLB record of 762 home runs, and those are just all outs, he's still getting on base at a clip higher than David Ortiz, Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's no, he's a whole nother level.
Wins above replacement leaders, according to Fangraph, all time. Babe Ruth, 168.4. Number two, Barry Bonds, 164.4. Then there's a pretty drastic dip to number three, Willie Mays, at 149.9 wins above replacement for his career. David Ortiz comes in at 182 with 51. I mean, the difference between Barry Bonds' career WAR and David Ortiz's career WAR, the gap is equal to Alex Rodriguez's career WAR. Barry Bonds from 2001 to 2004 has more wins above replacement than 32 current Hall of Famers, and that's not counting relievers. Like, and now we're just going to get into Barry Bonds' stats. 14 MLB All-Star appearances, 12 Silver Sluggers, 8 Gold Gloves, 7 MVPs, 3 NL Hank Aaron Awards, 2 NL Batting Championships, and 2 times was the home run champion. MLB records. Forget about just his numbers. These are straight up records. He holds the record for home runs with 762. 73 home runs in a single season. But this is where Barry Bonds, I think the steroid stuff should be put aside because of how elite he was with this stat. 2,558 walks.
Wow.
Not swinging the bat has nothing to do with steroids. The eye that Barry Bonds had when he went to the plate, one of the greatest of all time. He has a record of 232 walks in a single season. That will never be beaten, dude.
No, of course not.
No one's ever going to walk more than that. He once in a season had a 609 on base percentage. Like, two out of three times that Barry Bonds came to the plate, he touched first base. Think about how insane that is. Now, he's all about the home run and the walk, and I think it's because, and we all know, Barry Bonds' famous Jesus Cross earring, his lone one earring, and no better way to put that on display. And he loved to do it. You could always tell he'd flip his head and show off that earring, baby. And no better way to do it than when you're trotting to first base or in a home run trot, right? You don't want to go too fast. You don't want to be full speed. And that's why Barry was all about the walk and the home run, was that Jesus earring, right? I don't know, dude. I just think it's so crazy that this guy isn't in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's absurd, but...
You're on the same page, eh? Like, we kind of feel the same, that it's silly that they're kind of shunning this era of baseball and like picking and choosing who did steroids but was nice enough to get in. Again, no knock on David Ortiz, beautiful human being. Love watching him in interviews, but what the heck are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of it's the way kind of like all culture has become. We really want to
hold people. I really struggle with this one, Scott. Yeah.
I don't know the right way to put him in the Hall of Fame. Like, do you put him in with an asterisk? Do you?
I think that's what you do. I think you do put him in with an asterisk.
Okay, but like, let's play that out then. If we're gonna put in Barry Bonds with an asterisk, who else gets an asterisk?
Everyone from the era.
Okay, but then who, just the whole era gets an asterisk? Like, Ken Griffey Jr. was in that era.
I know, and listen.
Do we give Ken Griffey Jr. an asterisk?
The problem with this time in baseball is it's impossible to prove who did and who didn't do it. It's
right.
Impossible.
So who gets an asterisk is my point. That's exactly my point, right? Like, we have
so
some
you
people
tested,
who for sure tested, right?
I mean, I think if you tested positive, it has to be documented. And if you don't, it can be right in there. I mean, that's the thing. When you go into the Baseball Hall of Fame, it should just be like, okay, there was a time in baseball. It's like the dead ball era. Like, they bring up the dead ball era, right? And they kind of... I don't know, man. I don't know what to do with
this
scenario.
Hard,
and it,
right?
It is a sticky situation, and it is hard. But I just think...
Let's even say we figure out who to give an asterisk to from the steroid era. Okay, Barry Bonds is in. Curt Schilling is in. Roger Clemens is in. Whatever, right? Go down the list. Now what do we do with Pete Rose? Do we put him in with an asterisk? Is that a thing?
I think...
All-time leader in hits.
Here, I think the solution is honestly cleaning up the definition as to what the character clause is. I think that baseball writers should be viewing this much more as documenting the history of baseball rather than enshrining certain moments, right? Like, I think that what Barry Bonds did is inhuman. It's insane, the numbers he put up, whether with PEDs or without. And there's a lot of people who even say Barry Bonds didn't even start doing PEDs until 1999. There's a lot of people who say he was already almost at 500 home runs before he even started juicing. I mean, again, impossible to prove any of this, but
yeah.
And I know there's a lot of people who are like, cheaters should be out. And if the Baseball Hall of Fame had done a good job in making sure that this was the rule across the board, I'd be all for it. But it's so arbitrary and pick and choosy as to what morality clause or line they're putting players into, you know?
Okay, well, because we could go backwards with it way back before Barry Bonds, right? We can go early baseball. Which of those assholes, like Ty Cobb and all the other monsters from back then, and I say that with quite a bit of confidence, because relative to today's moral standards, basically everyone born before 1991 is a
is an asshole,
is a human garbage bag, right? Of just moral corruption, right?
The walk-off crew included.
especially us. Yes, exactly. So we could go back that far, but like, let's even look more recently. What do we do with the Houston Astros? Right? Is the whole
team...
Well,
they didn't take away... Like, they didn't take away their World Series.
Didn't take away the World Series, right? So are we going to just have a listing in the record books as, like, no World Series winner that year? Are all of those players ineligible? You know, what level of involvement did one of those players need to have before they're, you know, smeared enough to not be eligible?
This is the problem.
What do we do with all the pitchers from last year and the year before with the sticky stuff?
Yeah.
Right. So, did any pitcher who pitched in the major leagues in the last, well, let's say at least 2 years, is that entirely ineligible for the Hall of Fame now?
That's why I say document it. Put it in and document it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I just feel like there are so many hypocrisies in this, you know? Like, there's so many guys that they have already turned a blind eye to some of this stuff and have included into the Hall of Fame. And then to deny a guy of Barry Bonds' skill and numbers, it just seems crazy.
It's absolutely absurd, but... I think they should take every artifact out of the building, demolish it, and build a new one with just wing after wing after wing dedicated to each era. And then if you played in this era and if you are pretty darn good, you're there. I don't know.
I'm really actually quite curious to see what some of the comments are. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who disagree with the idea that Barry Bonds should be allowed into the Hall of Fame. And I hope that those people who are against Barry Bonds being in the Hall of Fame are also up in arms about David Ortiz being in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to pick and choose which guy you like if it's just a black and white thing when it comes to something like steroids,
man,
right?
We've just spent 20 minutes on this stupid...
And have gotten nowhere.
And have gotten nowhere. Can we just
move
on
at the end of this
point?
Like,
I'm ready for bed.
Yeah,
like, I just woke up. I want to go back to bed, crawl into a cave or a hole somewhere.
All right. Well, move on from the Baseball Hall of Fame here. And we'll get into some Blue Jays stuff. The Blue Jays over the last 5 years specifically, even maybe a little bit longer, have been very, very good with their international free agent signings. I mean, obviously the big one
Sem
is Vladdy.
Oh, yeah, Vladdy.
No, but Sem Roberce is a good example of a guy that maybe wasn't scouted by other organizations, and they dug him up out of the Netherlands. Emmanuel Beltre is another dude who's moving up those ranks with the Blue Jays. Leo Jimenez just got added to the 40-man roster with the Blue Jays, and he was an international free agent signing. Gabriel Moreno, the number one prospect in the Blue Jays system, was signed as an international free agent for $25,000.
What a steal, hey?
What a steal that was. And I mean, the scouting department has grown drastically on the international side of things over the last 5 years since Atkins and Shapiro's regime has taken over. And they've also become a lot more active on the Pacific Rim. And that's why you see the Blue Jays tied to more and more Korean players and more Japanese players. And they are up to their old tricks. They made several international free agent signings this year, including their top get, who was Luis Meza out of Venezuela, catcher, 18-year-old. They signed him for $2 million, and he's projected to be a guy with some pop, a guy with a good feel for the catching position. Of course, the Jays already pretty deep at that catching position, but the international free agency system is so interesting to me, dude, because they can't sign these kids till they're 16, which is still so crazy young, but they start wooing them at 15. And these deals are more or less in place when the signing process begins. And yeah, it's really kind of cool because there's like this unwritten rule amongst organizations and teams not to step on each other's toes. So once they have that handshake deal in place, most teams are going to stay away. So scouts are already looking ahead to next year's free agent class, and there's a lot of excitement. Scouts are really, for the first time in years, thinking that this might be the biggest international free agent class since 2016. You know, since like Vladdy, pretty much.
Yeah.
They're calling them the Big Four. So there's four kids that are turning all sorts of heads at 15 for the next year's free agent class, the international free agent class. And the Jays already have one of them handshake deal locked in. The free agent the Jays are targeting is Dominican-born Emmanuel Bonilla. So he turned 16 in November. He plays outfield. The kid is 6'3 and 205 pounds at 15 years old. And I guess he projects as a well-rounded hitter that's not just about power. And that's what scouts are so excited about at 15, right? Is that he really has an advanced eye for his age. And the Jays already have a handshake deal in line with him for $4 million. So that's almost their entire, when it comes to the international free agents, each team is allotted a certain amount of money to spend, and that's capped. So $4 million is almost the Jays' entire free agent budget when it comes to international signees. So they really believe in this kid. And at 15, obviously anything can happen. He could get injured, and the Jays change directions before they even sign him, is the truth. But maybe we see, you know, Lourdes and Teoscar move on and come. I mean, he's 15, so it'd probably be, what, 2027, 2028?
Before he's with the big club?
Before he's with the big club? I mean,
yeah, 20, I'm
most
like
likely
20
he
or 21, so that's still.
Still, right?
That everything would need to go correctly on his development, but yeah.
Kids are sure skewing younger and younger,
that's
right?
That's true. They really are. I mean, okay, here's one thing. Let's just, I don't want to get too into the weeds with the lockout talk, but I feel like whatever agreement we come to, someone is going to figure out a way to exploit a loophole, mm-hmm. and that could very well be
the Tampa
what we
Bay
see
Rays.
Next.
No,
the Tampa Bay Rays. No, but I mean, we do see younger and younger players making their MLB debuts. Would it be crazy to think that in 3 years from now, the Tampa Bay Rays have figured out that, like, hey, we can field a team of 18-year-olds, and it is very financially
beneficial.
Beneficial,
so.
Right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's not crazy to me. It's crazy to think how young Vlad and Bo were when they made their debuts. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like growing up, when I was watching baseball as a kid, it felt like rookies were like 24, 25, 26 years mm-hmm. old. And now rookies are like 20 is not uncommon. I guess it's still uncommon, but it's not.
No, but every yes. team has a 20-year-old on it, you know, like, and that's something that didn't happen before. Even you look at last year, right, with Wander Franco and the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, he made his debut at 19, and yeah. he was held back.
Yeah.
His service time was manipulated because it's the Rays, so.
Yeah, so there you go, right? Like, is it crazy to think that we're going to start seeing 18-year-olds making their debut in the MLB in 3 years? I can't imagine that it would happen.
I would
happen,
say so. I think you're onto something.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. Let's just
say. We won't see teams, but we'll see players. We'll see 18-year-olds. I think that's the next wave. I mean, right now it's 20-year-olds. It's going to keep skewing younger.
Yeah, like, I just, why not, I guess, is the theory, right? Like, if you can, if a guy, I just.
Like, if they're ready for the big leagues and they need to develop more, obviously there's still going to be a ton of development no matter what rock star 18-year-old winds up making the majors mm-hmm. and going from there. Like, if 18 kind of becomes the new 20 down the road, as we see more and more 15-year-olds with more and more skills.
Well, and part of it, I think analytics plays a role.
Mm-hmm. Just so much information's available now.
And it's also, like, managed for them. You know, we talked mm-hmm. about this with Joe Siddle on Wednesday. You know, the idea of, you know, the game being called for the catcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't think that's going to happen. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, right? But more and more stuff like that is becoming a thing. You know, we see it with the outfielders checking their cheat sheet in their back pocket yeah. and all that, right? That's why guys developed later years and years ago, right? That's why we're seeing these younger guys is they don't have to, for lack of a better term, learn the game as much, right? And they're able to just, if they have the raw talent, well, we'll tell them where to stand. That's fine, right? Like, we'll tell them where
it's
the analytics says
point.
To go. So mm-hmm. if we just extrapolate that and move forward a bit, I think, you know, let's get them. What would you say is the past his prime year age for the typical Major League Baseball player? 32? 33?
Yeah.
So let's say 32. If a guy is making his MLB debut like Aaron Judge at, what was it, 25, 26 years old? Let's just say a guy makes his debut at 25. You're going to have 7 years of physically his prime.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all downhill from there. If you got a guy who's a superstar, like physically, I'm thinking of who's that kid for the Yankees? Jason Dominguez, right?
Yeah.
If you can just plug him in at 18 and you get 14 years of peak physical performance, essentially, why not?
Hey, you make a really good point when you bring up the analytics and just being able to kind of plug and play the guy. Because if you think about just the development of baseball in general, and sometimes it takes a kid till he's 25. Look at Aaron Judge, right? To figure out that he's got to lay off the high fastball. But if at 21, they're constantly like, listen, if you just can ignore that outside pitch or that inside pitch or whatever, and kind of plug that information into these kids and eliminate the learning process. I mean, there's for sure going to be negatives to this as well, right? And I think you're still going to see players be their smartest and their best at 29, 30, 31, 32, of course, because you can't fake experience. But you can sort of fake it. I mean, probably enough to see some 18-year-olds debuting in the next few years.
It's just, it's not crazy, right?
It's not crazy. I think we'll see it, yeah.
And I think people are going to roast me for even having this opinion. And I do realize they're going to say like, oh, that fat guy with the beard probably never even played baseball. I know I'm going to see those comments. I know that baseball is more than just analytics, and that,
of course,
you know, it development is huge. I get it. I just think,
I mean, we've seen 18-year-olds in the majors before, but I'm just thinking that we are seeing 2 to 3 20-year-olds on every single team make the majors these days. I don't see it impossible at all that in 3 to 4 years that age is not 20 anymore. It's 19, 18, right?
So thank you.
There's still going to be a ton of development involved. Like, baseball is a developmental league. So I don't think you can eliminate that, but maybe you can, like you said, take that window of their prime peak physical condition and make it a little bit wider.
Hey, if I'm handing out a $400 million contract, I would rather hand it out to a 24-year-old than a 29-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
Let's move on. David Phelps getting into the Blue Jays bullpen here. David Phelps, of course, was a member of the team back in 2019. You might have remembered him being traded for Thomas Hatch, who is still in the Blue Jays system. And actually, we may see him in the Blue Jays bullpen at some point in 2022. But David Phelps has been re-signed by the Jays on a minor league deal. He, of course, was brought in last year on a one-year, $1 million deal, and he played great until he was injured, right? What are his numbers there, Adam?
So he had 11 appearances in 2021 with an ERA of 0.87, which is phenomenal. So 10 innings pitched, obviously, as a relief pitcher, only gave up 8 hits and 2 runs, one of them earned over that time. 15 strikeouts in those 10 innings. So he has a strikeout per nine rate of 13.1, which is awesome, and a walk per nine rate of 3.5. Zero home runs given up in that time. So
now that's another one that was eye-popping, is that David Phelps really doesn't give out many home runs, which is a big thing out of a reliever when you're pitching in the AL East. Mm-hmm. And David Phelps is a guy with experience, right? He's a guy who could absolutely, he could win a spot in this Blue Jays bullpen. He's a guy who won Charlie's trust last year, right? I mean, at the end of April, beginning of May, when the Blue Jays bullpen was literally on fire and guys were going down with injury and they were losing 2 to 3 games a week because of the bullpen, David Phelps was like the lone man who you felt good coming out of that pen in a high leverage situation. And Charlie went to him regularly there until he was injured.
Right.
And it was a season ending injury. And it sucked for David Phelps, you know, especially to deal with an injury like this at 34. It's a little bit easier to come back from an injury when you're a little bit more youthful. However, I like to see that the Blue Jays are taking a chance on him, giving him a minor league deal and giving him an opportunity to win a spot in this bullpen. And I think he has the ability, if he fully recovers, to do just that. All right, we'll move on.
Sorry, were you waiting for feedback from me on that, Scott?
I was just waiting to see if you were going to jump in with anything, but no,
I mean, I don't know what else there is to add. David Phelps, not the sexiest topic for me to
really throw my juices all over.
No. But, you know, you nailed it. I think, good job.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, man.
Can you tell we're end of January and in the middle of a lockout? My goodness, man. some of this stuff.
We miss 1 week and our flow gets thrown off.
Yeah. So Kenny Rosenthal continuing to excite Blue Jays fans. This Freddie Freeman rumor will not go away. Of course, we're in the middle of a lockout, so it doesn't really matter. If things aren't heating up, it's the same. But Rosenthal did come out and say that once this lockout ends, Freeman will be one of the first guys to sign, in his opinion. And if it's not the Braves, then the Jays are very much in on him. But, I mean, the truth is, after this lockout ends, the free agent frenzy is going to be insane. We're in a famine right now. The feast, buddy, once this thing ends, is going to be phenomenal. We're not going to be bringing up Ken Rosenthal's thoughts on Freddie Freeman.
No, I
anymore.
I think you have a great point that it is. There's a lot of unofficial backdoor deals that have been made. I'm sure it's just a matter of putting pen to paper once a CBA gets announced. So maybe instead of speculating, where do you think Carlos Correa will sign? We should phrase it as, gee, I wonder where Carlos Correa has already signed.
It's a good point. I mean, you're not supposed to be doing it, but I have a real hard time believing that there isn't some backdoor deals and some talks going on right now. Why wouldn't there be?
For me, it just comes down to, like, he's got to be playing more than one team at this point. And I think this is really going to help his dollar figure go up, because let's just say the San Francisco Giants have a $375 million offer in place with him. He's got no rush in the world to sign that, because he can't. Right, the team can't say, hey, sign now or we're pulling the deal, right? There's none of that pseudo fake leverage, right? It's all bullshit anyways. But then he just goes down, you know, over to Oakland. Not Oakland, that's a terrible example. They don't have any money. But, you know, goes wherever, goes to the Yankees and says, hey, I got $375 over, you know, 10 years from San Francisco. And they go, okay, we'll give you $385. And he goes, all right, cool. Yeah. And goes back to San Francisco. And just, he's going to make so much money. It's kind of sickening.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he is. Okay, before we wrap this up, I did wish to just quickly touch on Hyunjin Ryu, who, and it's interesting because when we were talking to Joe Siddle on Wednesday, one thing he said about this lockout, when we were talking about Hagen Danner and just being on the 40-man roster, and he's like, the one thing that these fringe guys need to do is be selfish and look after themselves, get their trainers and get in shape. It's on you now. But Hyunjin Ryu kind of doing that selfish look after himself thing, right? He's kind of come out and said that with no end to the MLB lockout in sight right now, he's going to start training in Korea with his former KBO team, the Hanwha Eagles. He's currently working out on his own, but he's going to join the Eagles for their spring training February 3rd, which I think is great to see, right? And Hyunjin Ryu was a guy last year who kind of ran out of gas in August and struggled a little bit. And I think that as he gets older, his conditioning is something that he's going to be paying more and more attention to.
Definitely nice, to see him take a proactive approach and not just sitting around watching watching TV.
100%. Anything to add here, my man?
No, I think that's all good. We should just do one last promotion of some stuff we've got coming up. And
yes, Sunday in particular.
Sunday, Monster Trucks. We've got the inaugural episode of Long Toss, which if you've watched 39 minutes into our Friday news show during a lockout, you might be interested in.
Yeah.
So we're going to be joined by, I don't have the list of names with me here.
We have Sean Doyle from Jays from the Couch.
Craig Ballard,
friend of the show. Jays Talk.
Joel, also known as Hey Commie on TikTok.
Yes.
And Toronto Blue Jays pitcher Taylor Sesedo is going to be joining us. So we're going to sit down for an hour and a half, 2 hours, an hour. We'll see how it goes. We got a lot to talk about.
Should be a fun little panel. I'm actually really looking forward to this.
So it'd be a good time. We'll be live on YouTube, 6 o'clock Eastern, I guess, 4 o'clock Mountain Time. So if you are free and available, come join us on the live chat here on YouTube, and we'll get to as many of your comments and questions as we can too. So be lots of fun. Also,
and then go ahead. Sorry.
No. Also, we've got our Mr. Baseball movie review. We were supposed to record it yesterday, and then all of a sudden life happened to me. We're going to record it tomorrow. I've got all my notes. You've got all your notes. We've both seen it.
Yep. Ready to go.
I will just say, it was way better than I expected it to be. I hadn't seen that movie in a long time.
I hadn't seen it in a long time, too, and I enjoyed it quite a bit, too.
All right. Anything else you want to add now? Those are my 2 cents.
Just that we have some really awesome interviews coming up. If you missed Joe Siddle, that's up on our platforms right now, whether it's YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. We're also talking to Mark Zapchinski, former Blue Jay World Series champion with the St. Louis Cardinals. We're doing that on Wednesday. Then we're going to sit down with Spencer Horwitz, one of the top prospects in the Blue Jay system. Most likely, anyways, to make a debut in 2022. He was with the Vancouver Canadiens last year, probably getting a start with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. We'll pick his brain about all things baseball on Friday. Again, thank you so much, everybody, who has helped to build this walk-off community up. It blows me away every single day, and it's pretty darn cool to watch our Discord kind of operate with zero input from Adam and I. Everyone's in there just kind of talking amongst themselves, and it's a good fantastic hang.
That's for sure.
We're pushing 100 members in our Discord, and of course that's still and always will be free for you to join, and the link is going to be in the show notes. Thanks again, everybody, for paying attention to us, for clicking that view button, hitting subscribe, all those things that you do to help make this show successful every single week. We really do appreciate it. Check us out on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, the Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. Have a great day, everybody. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! With a drive. Season cracker shows to pitch to him.
Thanks for listening.